Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. I know it's been a long day, and there's quite some fun activities happening this evening, so thanks for being here. My name is Sarah Ballou, and I'm the membership manager for the Brewers Association and the American Home Brewers Association. I don't think this is anyone's first rodeo, so you know the drill. Just make sure your phones are silenced. And if you have any questions for this group, please do ask them in the microphone at the end. But with no further ado, I'll pass to this awesome team. Thanks for joining us for Business Plan Essential Prep, your checklist, with the Start a Brewery crew. And here's Laura Lodge.
Thank you, Sarah.
Yay.
So, hey, everybody. Thank you again. We'll just reiterate that thank you for being here. It's nice to have people in the room if we're going to take the time to put it all together. So thank you for being here. And a lot of you we've met out in the expo already. If we haven't had a chance to talk to you out there, please come back out there and visit with us because we're happy to talk about individual situations and missions whenever you have an opportunity. Today we're going to talk about business plan, your essential checklist. I'm your moderator today. We all have our different paths in the craft beer world. I started with distribution in the Big Beers, Belgians, and Barley Wines Festival. Some of you may be familiar with that festival in Colorado. Most recently, I've been part of the mentorship program that the Brewers Association does, working with Startup Tracks and Advancing Professionals, and that's one of the cooler things I've been doing, in addition to Start a Brewery. So Candace and I started Start a Brewery as a pandemic project, and we've worked to build it to the point where we can be here and share this resource of resources that we've built with you. So generally, and this is a good graphic, I think, Start a Brewery's purpose is to raise the bar for dreamers, startups, and growing breweries through education while lowering the barriers to the industry for those underrepresented and or without access. So we really are there to provide a path and or direction for anybody who wants to embark on this mission. Goals for our session. So this is reiterated if you kind of read about what we're doing. We want to leave you or have you leave us with understanding the importance of a successful business plan, learning about the building blocks that ground all the compelling business plans. You can put one together, but if you don't have these blocks, it's really not as effective. To learn some real-life examples, I think Candace has a few when we talk about the legality of your dream, and then walking away with kind of a checklist or a starting point about where you want to begin with your mission today. I'll introduce our panel here and let them introduce themselves a little more completely. Candace Moon, the craft beer attorney, Dustin Houck of Houck Architecture, Brooke Bristow, Bristow Beverage Law, and Will Camacho of Cultivate and Harvest. So Candace, will you share a few minutes or a few sentences about your background?
Sure. You didn't give me a heads up on this. I'm Candace Moon. I am the craft beer attorney. I'm an attorney focused on mainly breweries, branched off a little bit, cideries, kombucha, but based in San Diego, been doing this for 13 years, work with lots of startups, actually probably more breweries starting up than breweries that were already open. And I definitely recognize some faces, but talked to some of you folks yesterday, and thanks for being here.
Dustin?
Hello, my name is Dustin Houck. I'm an architect. We focus on projects in the craft beer industry, whether it's startups, new construction, feasibility studies for new locations, expansions, consolidations, adding tap rooms, adding kitchens, all those types of things, all over the country.
Awesome. Brooke?
Yeah. Brooke Bristow. My law firm's in South Carolina. Like Candace, we also focus a big bit on the craft beer industry, but we also do some stuff, wine, mead, cider, spirits, kind of full service start to finish. I also am a home brewer as well, so I have some street cred, I guess. But yeah, good to be here with you guys.
I think Brooke and Dustin are carrying our creds today because they're the big home brewers in the group. And Will?
Hi. Yes, my name is William Camacho. I'm specialized on pre-construction, so I like to say that my last day of my job is the first day you start construction. So anywhere from concept to dream to basically start a construction is my thing. So I've developed business plans, performas, and then, you know, I'm all about pre-planning, and that's my job. Thank you.
Cool. So our format today is that we're going to break the session up into four 10-minute segments. So each of our panelists is going to kind of offer their wisdom in their area of expertise or of today's expertise. But each of them can talk all day, and so crunching into 10 minutes for each section is going to be the challenge. So we're not going to gong them out loud, but we're going to really try to fit it into 10 minutes so we have some time for questions at the end. But what we're going to start out with first is we're going to just ask each of our panelists to talk about why they think a compelling business plan is so critical to success. Will, you want to start us off?
Absolutely. There's a non-original quote that says, planning to fail is,
failing to plan.
Is failing the plan. Is that how it goes? Anyways, you get the concept. So Candace and I are very, unfortunately, in the early days, we were rolled into projects or businesses that didn't do the planning stages, and we saw and suffered with them. So quickly we realized that, or at least I realized that if I can help not troubleshoot, but more proactively deal with the situation, then that's just the best way to approach this thing. So why is it critical? Is because your life depends on it. It's you're really going to change your life. It's a life decision. Not only are you affected personally, but all your relationships as well. So so that's why I think it's important.
Awesome. Dustin?
From the architecture side, you know, what we look for, just like with any business, your business plan is critically important. But for a brewery in particular, is identifying your location and making sure it has what you need to operate your business and your brewery. You're basically creating a manufacturing facility with a kind of a hospitality component for the tap room. And so finding a location that's suitable for that, or that we can build it for you to meet those requirements. And so having those things outlined can help you with your budget and your business planning and prepare you for moving forward with that process. So it's critically important to have that stuff sorted out.
Awesome. Candace?
So having, and I know you guys have been in this business as almost the same as long as I have. Yeah. There was a time where if you made great beer, you could open a brewery and the people would come. And I think we've reached a point where a lot of breweries are open. And so now just making great beer isn't enough. You have to be able to run a business. And a big part of that is planning how you're going to do it ahead of time and trying not to make the mistakes that those who went before you might have made along their way, and doing it as efficiently and as cost effectively as you can. And a business plan really helps you get there.
Brooke?
Yeah. To kind of piggyback off that, I think of it more as it helps you keep direction. It's a GPS. It's a compass. It keeps you accountable. It's something where, you know, if you're making this big leap, you are not just creating a job for yourself for a couple of years. You're turning it into, you know, a hopefully long-term career. So I think it's important for those reasons.
Awesome. Okay, we're going to start out with Brooke with business structure.
Okay.
And dial it on in.
All right, here we go. Yeah, so you make great beer. That's great. You're going to the next level. Also great. And this is kind of step one before we get into everybody else here. Has anyone ever created a company before? Do you have a business? Okay, so that's a good amount then. So really, it comes down to most likely. If you're going to start a brewery, you're probably going to be either an LLC or a corporation. There are other possibilities, but you know, as a lawyer, I would probably tell you, well, you know, you want an LLC or a corporation because you want to protect yourself. You don't want to be personally liable if something goes wrong. If there's an accident, you don't want personal assets to be at risk. So we need to have some sort of formality for you to protect you. You know, kind of, and I'll stick with those two because that's what most breweries are, or at least the ones we work with. Most of them are LLCs, and the reason most of them are LLCs is because there's a lot less work. There's a lot less paper to shuffle. There's a lot less meetings that are required, and you have to pay your attorneys less to do that paper shuffling. So that's a reason. Really the big differences in all of the kind of corporate formations are, it really comes down to how you want to be taxed, how do you want to manage it, and who has ultimate control. LLC side, it's a lot more informal than a corporation. The decisions are made by usually the members, which would be kind of the partners. It's kind of another word for that. Differences, pros, cons. Corporation would be like a board of directors. Again, more formality, but generally you want the people on site to do that. I would say taxes do come into play here. I try not to get too much into numbers or math, just because the numbers are hard. but that being said, generally speaking, LLC is easier to deal with on the tax side, just because it's something that you would report on your personal taxes instead of being taxed twice like you would as a corporation. So that's a pro to doing an LLC. But really it just comes down to like how much work do you want to put into it. So generally speaking, most breweries are gonna go the LLC route. But again, it's gonna depend a lot on your situation, how many investors you have, what do those investors want. I think that's probably another slide. Oh, okay, there you go. How demands affect business entity selection. So money. That it really comes down to money. A lot of times you're probably, I would say most of us are not able to fund a brewery out of our own pocket. So we're going to have to go shopping for money. Most money people, and I shouldn't say all, but most money people are not beer people. So there's going to be a bit of a disconnect there. There's going to be a disconnect into what they want to see out of it versus what you want to do, and basically how much control they're going to get. So that goes into your valuation or how you're going to structure it. Are you just going to be a one person deal? Are you going to have two partners, three partners, four partners? Generally, more people you bring in, the trickier it's going to get. So it's nice to kind of keep the club small, so to speak. Sweat equity, and it might not be when you start, but down the line, you might want to bring somebody in who's willing to, they will contribute nothing monetarily, but they will do the work, which for most, but then again, that could be you at the start as a nano brewery, if that's the direction you want to go. But basically to sum that up, you don't need as you move forward in the process, I guess, is how you're going to figure out how you actually want to structure this. Once you start kind of shopping your idea around, you have people taste your beers. Hey, you make great beer. You should start a brewery. Okay, great. Well, now what's the, how am I making this official? How am I legitimizing myself? Which is why this is step one. I think you can turn the slide. Okay, yeah. So once we have that idea and we figure out, okay, I want to be this for this reason. So let's just go with the LLC. I want there to be less paperwork. I want it to be easy to file. I want to make most of the decisions. Two ways to go. Now you need to make your kind of rules of the road for, let's say, you have a couple other investors. The laws do offer some protections in some ways, but you also might want to kind of structure it differently. I'll give you some examples here of, what you might want to put in there. So let's say, and these are more for looking down the road, I guess, and I'm sorry, I'm just kind of rambling here, but at some point, maybe somebody's wants to get bought out or wants to be able to sell shares. Generally for LLCs, there's going to be something in there about restricting that, because you don't want you don't want some rando to come in and have control of the company and somebody just kind of, you know, sold it like you can stock in a corporation. So that might be something you want to put in your agreement. You might want to put something in there about how you want to be taxed. Maybe you want to be, we didn't talk about S-corps, but a lot of LLCs pick S-corp taxation to save on employment taxes. So maybe you want to put that in there. Maybe you want to talk about the process of how you make management decisions. You know, is that a 51%? Is it a 75% approval? Does it have to be unanimous? That's pretty important. Also important would be, you know, how often are you having meetings? What are you accomplishing at those meetings? Stuff like that. So really the uses of those documents are to just kind of to plan ahead, A, B, to have rules of the road for how your company operates. And then you also need one to start a bank account. So that's also important. Right. So more cooks in the kitchen, more trouble generally. A lot of times you have a couple of partners that are going to be like super involved in the business, and then you're going to have people not so much. I've had occasion where there's ultimately a split down the road because the people who are working hard don't think the other people are working hard enough, and so inevitably there's a fallout. That's not always true, but that being said, it's important at the beginning to, you know, just really give some thought to it. I had one client who came in. I think they had, you know, they had 10 people to start with, and which is crazy. Needless to say, they are now a twosome, just because ultimately, you know, people have their own ideas and goals of what this is going to be, what it's going to look like, and you know, honestly, it doesn't always go the way they want. Obviously, the main takeaway would be you want to keep as much control as you possibly can. You don't want to be subject to somebody who maybe doesn't know anything about beer or how breweries should be run. But again, that's going to come through what your negotiations off the top are with them in terms of how it's structured, how much say do they have, what ultimate control do they have over the company. Separating personal business liability and financial type of company as a company documents can provide more insight into expectations. Right. So basically what I said already, your choice in your entity impacts, you know, what your liability is, you know, kind of what's on the line for you, what laws are you subject to, how you manage, how you control, how you make decisions, how you run your business, how you file your taxes, how do you keep your records. It's important to have right off the rip. Another big reason I didn't really talk about is when you're going to investors, when you're talking to banks, when you're kind of out shopping this dream of yours, it really legitimizes what you're trying to do. And really that's a big reason to do it as soon as you kind of start going down this road. It's to show that you're really serious about doing it and that it's not just, you know, I'm not just somebody with a dream. I'm somebody with a vision and a goal, and I know what I want to do with myself and what this looks like when you're presenting it to possible investors. And that's important because Candace is going to tell us why. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good segue, right?
Yes, okay.
So we're going from establishing control and setting it all up to Candace's vision of the legality of how you do that.
Exactly. Well, I was actually going to kind of pull back for a minute and kind of talk about, just for a minute, kind of why we just talked about the whole business entity. So a large part of your business plan is the structure of your company and how you're going to run the business. So you have to actually set up the business and kind of have that in place before you kind of start to write about it. So kind of my piece here as well is you need to have your vision, basically make sure you can legally do what you want to do. Like, and I will tell you, I've had people come to me who have their business plan and have spent all this time putting together this like this plan, this vision for something that is not legal in their state. And so then they have to go all the way back to the drawing board. So one of the things you really need to do your due diligence and research on is, what does my state allow and what does my state not allow? And occasionally I have had people who have multiple states that they're looking at potentially starting up in, especially if they're in like a tri-state area where they're so close to a state line that they can make that decision to be in another state. So you've got to get familiar with, whether it's through other brewers locally, whether you meet up with a beer attorney who knows the laws of the state. Like, I can tell you California back in my hand, but when I have someone call me in another state, I generally, if I can, refer them to someone in that state, but I don't always know someone. But your fellow or local professional brewers, and maybe some of your fellow home brewers who've already kind of done some investigation, may be able to help let you know whether or not what it is you're envisioning is legal. And again, I can also tell you on a federal level. So, for example, I had a gentleman come by the booth yesterday wanting to know if he could put a brewery in his house. And just so you know, as long – and there are multiple things, by the way, not just the TTB, the federal, but your local zoning, which I know Dustin's going to talk about a little bit. But so I would say, depending on where your house is, you first need to find out zoning. He lives in the middle of nowhere, which is great because that's usually really good for zoning. There's not a lot of rules and regulations. So from the TTB standpoint, one thing is you cannot live in your brewery, which therefore means your brewery cannot be where you, in your living space. So it can't really be in your house. However, if you're zoned correctly locally, you can put a brewery in your garage. It has to have a lockable door to the house, and it has to have its own entrance. So depending on your locality, it is possible to legally have a brewery in your garage. Some places it's not. Especially if you live in the city of San Diego, I'm pretty sure the county, that's a no-go. But those are the kind of things you need to find out. And then there are things you might want to be doing. Let's say the whole key to your brewery idea is to, let's just say, have a race car track and a brewery. I'm going a little out the ordinary, but I think we can all see why that would probably not be legal with the driving of any sort of motor vehicle after drinking beer. I haven't actually had that one come to me, but I've had a few that are questionable. But, and again, the edgier they are, then research has to come into play. Like, I don't know if you can do that. But it's kind of key. You just want to make sure that before you write this 50-page business plan, that you're going to be able to do what it is you want to do. So, as well, I don't know if everyone is familiar with the three-tier system, but especially people who have not worked professionally in alcohol, there are definitely certain licenses that you can hold and you cannot hold other licenses concurrently. So that will also come down to understanding who can be a part of your business. So for the people you're looking to possibly invest, you need to make sure that in your state, so in California, a manufacturer can also hold a certain number of retail licenses. So you've got to make sure if you're opening your brewery in California and you have a restaurateur who has, let's say, 7 restaurants, wants to invest, you can't take their money because that's going to be an issue with the state ABC. And for those of you who've started down this road in the past, there was kind of this general rule that it was a 10% level. Well, that's changed. Over the last 6 months, they're looking at every single investor, no matter how much. So I had a lovely client who did online crowdfunding or equity crowdfunding, has like 1,500 investors, and we had to give every name to the ABC, who then went through that list, checked it against their database. And then we had to go back and get social security numbers and birth dates from about 200 people who had the same or similar names. And I have no doubt that other states are just as potentially nitpicky, shall we say. So you got to make sure you understand what the allowances are, who's allowed to hold what kind of license, to see who you're able to let into your company, so that then down the road you don't have to divest people, which I've also had clients have to do. Other compliance regulations, there's not a lot you have to know up front, but let's say your main marketing idea behind your brewery is to do a lot with retailers, and we're going to give all these special things to the bars. Well, no, because you're not allowed to give things of value to retailers as a manufacturer. So if that's kind of the whole marketing plan behind your brewery or your brand, you're going to have to go back to the drawing board. So there's just a lot of things you can and can't do, unfortunately. And so when I have clients who get new marketing people and they have these awesome, cool marketing ideas, and I'm
you're the bad guy.
No, I'm the bad guy. No, can't do that. Can't. Where does it say I can't do that? I'm like, I mean, do you really want to read the state regulations? So anyway, try and find out. Make sure your vision's legal. And just so you know, a lot of people, I won't speak for Brooke, but I will tell you that, I mean, I've been doing this for 13 years and I still offer free consultations. So let's say you had an idea and you wanted to call me. I would listen to your idea and go, no, you probably can't do that. I'm not going to give you legal advice necessarily that would require a client thing, but like you can grab people like us at events like this. There's a lot of ways to get that information for free. You can also check out Start a Brewery. I'm not sure. We have definitely probably more on the federal side for regulation. State, you're going to need to find somebody locally.
Buy us a beer and we'll tell you for free.
Well, that's
are they a client?
Can be,
if money
can
was,
be bribed.
Beers exchanged.
Yes. Oh. Okay. And then
so she just said no.
She just said no.
No again. Yeah.
Yeah. I always say. I almost always have to say no. And then the other thing too, and this is another thing to think about when you're looking at how you want to make. Your vision happen or your dream is the potential other ways to do it. So whether your state and I know actually, well, this is a national convention. Mm-hmm. I'm in California. I keep thinking California. So whether your state allows for alternating proprietorships, which is a great way to get a start, I believe. How your state views contract brewing, which we actually just did a podcast episode on contract brewing, and it definitely wasn't what we expected the answers to be for startups. It's definitely more complicated. So if that's your vision or idea, you want to look, check around and talk to people for, so A, the licenses you're going to need, but then also how feasible is it based on the amount of beer that you are wanting to brew to start. Versus how much beer you may have to commit to brewing, depending on who you're working with. And then again, the regulations for tap rooms, does your state offer self-distribution? Like all those things are going to become part of your business plan. So you need to know ahead of time, before you start writing, what you're able to do and what's going to be the best best for you.
Would you do a quick definition of alternating proprietorship?
I'm sorry. A quick definition of alternating proprietorship. I always, physically, it's going to be like a Venn diagram where in the middle you share the equipment and then each brewer has exclusive area in the facility. It also looks a lot like a landlord-tenant where you have a host brewer, so the existing brewery rents you some small exclusive space. And then time on their equipment to brew your own beer. And then there is a variation that is questionably to be called an all prop where then you then pay the host brewer to do the brewing for you. But I'm not a big fan of that one.
There you go.
Okay.
All right. Let's move on to location considerations and feasibility. So we'll get out of, well, some still legal stuff, but pass on the baton to Dustin.
Yeah, so I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the design considerations when you're looking at your brewery and kind of some of the first things we look at. So I'm going to go through some zoning considerations, things that your planning and zoning department, where they allow breweries to be built and have that kind of combination of a brewery and a tap room together, what utilities you need for your space, how you kind of plan your layout of your space, and looking at your production volume. So understand kind of how much beer you want to make, how much space do you need that. Really kind of all the things kind of go into your business plan before you start looking for a location, knowing what you're trying to do can sort of define that. So you can really use that as a guidebook for your realtor to help you find that perfect location. So, and when it comes to zoning, every jurisdiction is going to have a different zoning code that will define what you're allowed to do where in different zones. And you'll find maps that are colored like this, can kind of show you what a zone might be, and you can kind of look those up in the zoning codes as to what uses are allowed, what uses maybe are allowed with special use permits, and then really get into what those use permits are, what the time and cost is to process those permits. And a lot of times you can't process building permits concurrently with planning and zoning permits, so that makes your review process get longer. And so those are things you need to factor into your business plan, because you're going to have longer carrying costs to get through some of those things. And in some areas, there may have special districts. There may be incentivized district that may offer expedited plan checks or discounted fees because they're trying to revitalize a particular area. So those are sometimes really great for a brewery, an opportunity. Breweries are pretty much proven as a revitalization component to some of these neighborhoods. So it really helps not only you financially and time-wise, but it's also something that the city is really looking for. And it's important to understand that zoning is different from building. So zoning are regulations about what is allowed in a neighborhood. Your building code dictates how a building is built related to what's in it. So there are really two different things. You can get these incentives from the planning and zoning departments to say, yes, we really want you here. We're going to make this really easy for you. We're going to process it through as fast as we can. On the planning and zoning side, probably, because they wrote their own codes for that. But when it comes to building and life safety, those are state and federal laws, and so they really got to go by the book on those, and they can't be lenient and go faster for you and not for someone else. So then I'll go to the next slide.
Yep.
For talking about utilities, kind of what you're looking for in the building you're going for, making sure it has all the mechanical requirements that you need. Obviously, there's heating and cooling, but brewery produces steam and exhaust, so for the different systems of fuel you're using. So being able to get the ventilation that you need, making sure it has the proper electrical supply that you need. It's not only the amperage, but the voltage that it's coming in at, so that you can feed all of your equipment with the proper voltage, making sure the phasing is right, because that'll change. If you, for example, if you only have single phase in that building and you can't get three phase, what does that mean to your operational budget? Because you're going to be using more power, and it's going to cost you more to run that brewery on a single-phase system than it would be on a three-phase system. So you kind of weigh that versus the cost of upgrading that system now. Maybe it's more upfront cost, but it'd be less operationally as you go through. So making sure that the facility has it. So most breweries, a lot of breweries that we're seeing these days are in the 3 to 10 barrel range. So you're looking for something probably a 400 amps minimum and recommend a three-phase service for that. And then you look at the water supply. What's the size of the line coming into the space? What size of the natural gas line coming into the space to feed those system, whether it's boiler fed or direct fire fed? And this has a proper sewer system that can handle your waste. You get some of the older buildings have maybe poor or disintegrated sewer systems, and understanding that and what that cost might be to improve those if you need to. Lastly, the big one is fire sprinklers. So pretty much every state, they follow national codes, and those codes have thresholds for when fire sprinklers are required in a building. So one of the key ones is when a tap room is over 49 people, it's considered its own occupancy group, which is an A2 assembly occupancy group. The building code requires a separation between your tap room and the production area, because the production area is considered an F2 for manufacturing. The building code says that you have to have a one-hour separation between those two uses, one-hour fire separation, or the building has to be equipped with fire sprinklers. So if you want to have more than 49 people in your tap room, then you're going to have and be open air to the brewery, you're going to have sprinklers. And those one-hour walls are they're to prevent a fire from crossing them. So you can't really have glazing in them without it being fire glazed, and there's a very small percentage of glass you can have based upon the linear footage of the wall. So you really can't have openings in a one-hour rated wall. So if you want to be open to the customer area and more than 50 people in your tap room, 49 people, you need to have sprinklers. You also have a threshold at 99 people. So if your tap room maybe it does have that separation, but if you have more than 99 people in that tap room, you're still in A2 occupancy, but there's a threshold for sprinklers in that. Or maybe your building is over 5,000 square feet. That's another threshold. So you get into a little bit bigger building, a little bit more people. Fire sprinklers are extremely important and make your life a lot easier if your building has them. If you're leasing a building it's awfully expensive to pay for that infrastructure to come into a building for a building that you don't own. You're putting a lot of money into someone else's building. So, you know, if you're going to have to do that upgrade, hopefully you own the building or you're building it new and you're providing those things right out of the bat. So those are the utilities you're looking for, understanding kind of what you're going to need. And then when you're looking at your layout, you really want to think about how product is going to move through your facility, how you're going to bring raw materials in, how they're going to circulate through the brew house, how your grain's going to come in, how you're going to mill it. You go through the brew house process, then getting that spent grain out close to a way to get it outside because it goes bad real quick, for going through the fermentation cellar to your finishing cellar, and into whatever kind of packaging you're doing, either it's going to kegs or serving tanks or whatnot, and then how that tap room integrates into that space. So I think the whole reason for having a tap room in a brewery is to experience the beer where it's being made. So you want to be a part and immersive to that brewery experience. And what's different from going to a brewery than it is a bar? Well, you're there where it's made. So make the customers a part of that experience. Think about how they can see the equipment, be a part of it, but not be bothersome to that process, and keeping your patrons safe. You know, not having them walk by boilers and different things that can be dangerous. But kind of think of, like, in this situation, this kind of a T layout. So the tap room kind of sticks down into the middle of the brewery, and you have restrooms and tap box on one side and the brewery on the other side. And this is Fall Brewing Company. This is a layout for them. They're up the street here in North Park. So if you get up there, you can see pretty much all the operations without being physically in the brewery itself. But you definitely know you're at a brewery, and that's why you go to a brewery to have a beer.
These slides will be available, so you can see this a little closer up as well.
Yeah. So then we talk about how much space do you need. So we normally start looking at, just as a starting point, is assuming you need 1 to 2 square feet per maximum barrel of production per year. So, and that's what your max is going to be, what your system can do. So say you have a 10-barrel system, you can produce about 5,000 barrels max on that, so you need about 5,000 square feet to do that. That's kind of the starting point. Now, different things that you're going to do, if you're going to lager more, if that takes more time, more tank time, that is going to mean more square footage. And this is sort of broken up to the next slide, kind of a breakdown of how that space is divided. And so in that scenario, that kind of 1 to 2 square feet per maximum barrel production, that's assuming your tap room is 15%. So if you're a 5,000 square foot brewery, that tap room is about 750 square feet. That's at that 49-person number. If you want a bigger tap room and that same square footage, that number per square foot, or that square foot per barrel number, goes up a little bit. So this is kind of all the breweries that we design and lay out, kind of a breakdown of how those percentages are broken down. Now, as you get smaller, you get into like 3 barrels or less, it doesn't really translate to that because you just need space for storage. You may not be stacking your grain 4 pallets high, but you still need that pallet position for the different grain varieties you might have. So these numbers really more apply to about 5 barrels and up. And then as you get even bigger, you get more efficiencies out of it. So you can get below that one square foot per barrel. So these can kind of help you sort of guide, like understand what your system can do, what your max production can be, how much space do you need for that brewery. And then you can design that brewery for that optimized flow and then think about what you're going to add as you grow. It's much easier to bring in another fermenter or swap out a single batch fermenter for a double batch fermenter than it is to change the brew house. The brew house is the workhorse. You don't want to have that system down. So you can bring in a tank and set it, passivate it, drop a new glycol line, and be ready to go within a day on a new tank. If you have to change out your brew house because you're going to go from a 5-barrel system to a 10, you're down for weeks. And so you really don't want to disrupt that process. So thinking about how you're going to grow, what your tank makeup is going to be, and build out that cellar to accommodate those future vessels. It'll be great when you're new and young and you have that extra space. And as you grow, you'll fill up that space with those vessels. So in that example from Fall Brewing Company, I think in the picture you'll see maybe 5 tanks there off of the top edge there. If you go there today, that entire cellar is packed from the front all the way to the back. So they're completely maxed out at what they can produce there, and they're moving on to making more beer in another facility. So that's really kind of the things you're looking at. Identify what's a right neighborhood for your brewery, how much beer are you going to make, what size your system's going to be, how much square footage do you need, and what utilities do you need to make that happen. And then you can, that's part of your business plan that goes along with how are you legal in what you want to do, how's your business formation going to be, and how are you going to get your investor to pay for all this, and then factoring all those things into your budget so you can move forward with your dream.
Awesome. Will, take us to the math side.
All right, I'm going to stand up so I'm not hiding behind the podium. So you know what? Everything we talked about here is a cost, right? So, and then all those costs is what I like to do is a capture and a pro forma. So what's a pro forma? It's just a fancy word to collect all your information. And then all that information, usually it starts in a spreadsheet. And like I said, it's a dry run into the future. So nobody has a crystal ball, but we sure have experience and we sure have precedence with an industry that's somewhat mature now. So what comes out of the pro forma? At the end of the day, it's profit and loss statement. Easy, right? Balance sheet is a little bit more complicated. It's more to balance your assets. That's a whole other discussion, but we'll just leave it at that. And then cash flow, that's another look at it. So cash flow is like how much cash do you have, right? So, and all these things are independent but codependent, right? So what I mean by that is, you know, you may have a couple months of negative cash flow, although you may be profitable, or vice versa. We'll talk about that later. But the most important thing that investors want to reach, and actually, well, yourself, is to really understand on paper, how are you going to achieve your break-even analysis? In other words, at what point are you going to actually make more money than you spend? And then return on investments, ROI. So not only for investors, but for yourself and for your sanity. So everything we talked about here impacts the bottom line, right? So how are you going to form your business? Well, there's a cost to that, right? So not only the cost of bringing in experts, but also the cost of incorporating and all that, the cost of documentation. Pre-construction and construction, you know, it's everything has to do with real estate and selection. So, yes, what Dustin just talked about in zoning, building code, understanding what to anticipate. It's one of the more difficult things to do because in the pro forma, it's easily the biggest expense, right? So coming up with a budget pre-design is really hard to do, but we have to do it. And you have to put your finger somewhere and have the confidence to do that. And then startup expenses, what that means is once you figure all the inputs of the pro forma, then this is what's called runway, right? So the analogy is an airplane. How long does an airplane need to accelerate, or how much do you need to accelerate to actually take off and launch your business? Not only launch your business, but get to the point of profit. So what I like to do, a five-year pro forma, really, like, the most reliable assumption is the first year. And then the first 3 years, we can go granular. And then after that, it's just the trajectory, right? But, so I call it a 5+1 year plan because, you know, day one is the day you start your business. But the plus one is actually represents however long it takes to get to your start date, right? So a lot of people approach me, it's like, hey, I want to be open in a year. You know, and that's, depending where you're at, and, you know, it's quite unreasonable, right? So, you know, I would expect, you know, 18 months, 24 months, easy, if you're thinking about a concept. A lot of people have what I call an unfair advantage. So was it inheritance? Is it real estate? Is it, you know, whatever, you know, it's like, do you have something? Well, in this market right now, there are a lot of businesses that are available to grab, basically. And that's a unique opportunity that's going on right now, is to look for, distressed businesses for various reasons. One of the biggest reasons is the fact that businesses weren't structured well to begin with, partnership breaks and stuff like that. EBITDA, what's that big word? What's EBITDA? So it's earnings before interest, taxes, deductibles, and amortizations. Basically, it's you want to look at what your EBITDA is, which is basically like without the weight of what I just said, you know, interest, taxes, deductibles, and stuff like that, because we mentioned earlier about valuation. So when a bank or an investor or how we're going to structure this thing, when you go shopping for money, their EBITDA is what they're going to look for. And then based on the EBITDA, basically they come up with a valuation. So what is an evaluation? It's a value to your company based on the number that you achieve in your EBITDA. And you do a multiplier of that. So if your EBITDA is $1 million in 3 years, whatever, 5 years, then a 4x multiple on the EBITDA is 4 times 1, 4 million, right? So the power of a really good pro forma is writing a very good pro forma business plan, because basically, and selling your vision, because just with that document and a good vision and a lot of confidence, people have been able to raise money, which is quite incredible, to be honest. But you know what do, so what are you selling? You're selling yourself, you're selling your business, you're selling your vision. How do you propagate it? It's, you know, your confidence. How do you get confidence? Is proper planning. How do you plan properly? Is to identify the resources that are available at startabrewery.com. So there's a lot of expertise behind it. We've unfortunately been through the rough, that's for sure. Learned a lot of lessons, but the advantage of being involved in the early days is that everybody knew we're all going to make mistakes. So, but nowadays, nobody has to pay for that. So performance structure is what you see here in the chart. So there's a lot that's involved, and then I like to go granular because, you know, at least my job, if I'm, you know, my vision of running a good performer is not to be the author, is to guide you to author it yourself. Because at the end of the day, when the bank and the investor, anybody who wants to go granular, you can have the answer like that. And just having the answer like that and having the backup in your head basically is what propagates your confidence. So, yeah, so we can go a lot deeper, but but I'm not going to because there's a lot to cover. So at the end of the day, if you walk away with this, it's plan, get the right expertise, get the podcasts that are available, get all the resources that are available. And so the one upside of COVID is that this project came into existence because we all have a lot of knowledge, and we just want to just basically propagate it out so you guys can be successful. Thank you.
Awesome. There really is a whole lot more that we can get into if we had the time.
Actually, Laura, can I make one?
Yeah, absolutely.
I did want to say one thing, is there's one very big section of the business plan that we're not covering today, because that would be a whole hour or more in and of itself, which is the marketing, the branding, coming up with that piece of it. So I know, I just wanted to say that because I know we didn't talk about that, but there's limited time. So
yeah.
Don't forget about that piece.
Yeah, so I'll just take a segue here. We offer you two different handouts in conjunction with this presentation. So you'll see handouts that have full articles and explanations about what is a business plan, the sections of the business plan, and then Candace had a section too about frequently things that people screw up a lot and advantages that you would have if you approached it a different way. So there's some really good tips and tricks in those articles. And then there's also a second handout that includes all of Dustin's information that would not fit today and all of Will's information that would not fit today. So feel free to dive not only into this presentation that will be available, but that kind of stuff too. In addition to all of that, we offer you some additional resources. Our panelists are our resources. All of our Start a Brewery contributors are available to answer questions. The AHA has a ton of information, and the Brewers Association, their libraries and their articles and their members are amazing resources. Our website includes a lot of those people, formal academic programs. One of the professors from UC Davis is with us today in the expo, if you got to meet Glenn. Free business coaching is also on our educational resources page, but the BA Mentorship Program, Bring the American Dream, Axion Opportunity Fund, the SCORE Program, SBDC, they all offer free business coaching. So if you're starting, if you're serious about this, contact one of those people, one of those organizations, and get set up with a mentor to walk with you. So we're going to kind of wrap up here a little bit with one final piece of advice from each of our panelists, and then we have some time for Q&A. So I'm happy to take your questions. But let's kind of wrap up in order. Brooke, you want to start us with final piece of advice?
On one of our podcasts, I had the gall, on the Start a Brewery podcast, I had the gall to say, hey, maybe don't start a brewery in jest. But what I really mean by that is, you know, we want you to have the information so that you can make good decisions and plan ahead. Whether you're going pro, whether you want to stay a home brewer, really the goal is that you be a good steward of that for beer as a whole. So really it's just like, you know, if after this you need a drink, but you still want to do it, like we're all for that. But certainly there's a, now, you know, there's a lot of information that you need to get. Yep.
I guess my one piece of advice is definitely take advantage of all the free information. As you all know, I assume brewers are very happy to talk about what they do, and that goes for the ones who've already gone pro, who are very happy to share their knowledge, their experience, and a lot of them have on blog postings of their journey to starting a brewery. So there's a ton of free information and a lot of consultants like us and others who are more than happy to share our experiences as well. So take advantage.
Yeah, I'd kind of piggyback on that, saying that, you know, don't take on starting a brewery on your own. Don't think you can do it all yourself. Bring in the people, the professionals that have the experience and trust what their knowledge is, and what, because we've all done it before and we know the best way to get through it. You can't get it all done on your own. So be sure to bring in the right people and delegate the things that you need to get yourselves open and get your doors going.
Since I don't hide. And then my last piece of advice, I was going to say what Dustin was going to say. So, so just another piece of advice is choose your partners very, very, very wisely and be very, very picky. Okay, it's worse. It's
clearly defined roles for everybody.
Yeah, so it's worth, it's a marriage. Partnership is a marriage. So so that's my last piece of advice.
So one of the things that Candace and I say a lot, and Candace wanted to make this our tagline, was you don't know what you don't know. And so our goal is to fill in the pieces that you don't know. We literally have task lists on the website of all the things you should be looking at when you're in planning stage. So take advantage. Okay.
Questions.
Yeah?
Questions.
Questions. Anybody have questions? Yay. Come on up.
Are we going to do the Price is Right thing?
It might be Price is Right. And this is one of Dustin's cool designs for the Lost Abbey.
So you're here in downtown San Diego if you get a chance to get down there.
Yeah. Yes.
Is there a benefit to becoming certified women-owned? Like, we might be women-owned on paper, but is there a benefit for a loan to women?
Yes, is the short answer. Let's see who wants to define that.
I think it's a tax thing.
Yeah. Okay.
So if there's an accountant in the audience, like the one we don't have... Can you?
No. Absolutely not. But it's you mentioned marketing, so it helps your identity, right? Yeah. So, you know, if that is relevant to your audience, then absolutely.
Okay.
There's also a lot of criteria with funding that's available if you are women-owned or majority women-owned.
Okay.
So if you can check some of those boxes, a lot of doors can open.
Okay, thank you. I have one more question. We plan on setting up as an LLC, but at some point we want to become an ESOP. So how long would, I just got a rough idea, like, so if we're in business a year or two, then we're ready for an ESOP? Like, we really do want to do it, but we're not sure how to transition.
I would say, there's pros and cons. The con to waiting is that you're going to have to do all your licensing again.
Oh, really?
So especially if you're in other states, you'll have to update every state.
Okay.
But the other thing is ESOPs are very expensive to put together. And so there's a reason the only couple I know were pretty big, well-funded breweries.
Okay.
So it's kind of like being green. Everyone wants to do it, and we all think it's awesome, but it's not cheap.
Right. Okay.
It's very expensive. So
thanks.
I don't know if that answers the question. But.
Well, it does. So.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Hi. I don't know if any of you have any experience with setting up meaderies or talking about mead and wine, specifically
yes.
about like licensing. Is it anything specific to take into mind when you're starting one?
What state are you in?
Indiana.
Oh, good Lord.
I
think Indiana, I think it's considered the same as wine. So whatever the rules and laws for wine are going to be the same.
Sure.
For
so
me.
It goes back to finding somebody local.
Yep. And federally, it's definitely the same as wine, which actually all the things we've said will pretty much correlate to any craft alcohol beverage.
Cool.
Yeah, most states you just have separations between beer and wine and distilled spirits. There's some states that allow commingling of those in facilities. Just depends on the state, but most in general are all separated. So kind of understanding what your law allows you to do, you'd be most likely licensed as a winery, but your product happens to be meat.
Yes.
Hi. So there's tap trucks, right, that go to events for beer?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What about making your own beer and having a tap vehicle? Is that a thing? Because I never see it. So I'm thinking it's not a thing.
How do you do licensing for that?
It depends on the state.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
and California would not be one of them.
Yeah.
So it's not one of them.
Not in California.
Okay.
You can't have a moving license.
So, but you can buy alcohol and do that, but you can't make
I mean,
not in California. There can be licensed events where you could have that if they're allowed to have alcohol at that event
on the premises.
On the premises,
the truck would
drive
onto the premises, but the truck doesn't have the license. The truck is just like a draft system.
Right.
Yeah, in California, it's the premises that gets licensed, and it wouldn't apply to a truck that would move.
So
food trucks can't have alcohol. Yeah.
Okay.
But what makes a tap truck legal for that? I'm sorry.
It would depend on what can't happen in California. So it would have to be in a state that would allow something like that. I think if they've
a
seen
moving
it,
license.
Well, I mean, for it to be legal, it would be on the premises that is.
It has
licensed.
To.
It would not be able to move while it is serving alcohol.
And it would
be on the premises that. So let's say, yeah, we drive into the parking lot of a brewery that has their parking lot premise, and it can sit there, and it can serve whatever that parking lot area is allowed to serve.
Okay.
So in other words, as a home brewer, you couldn't do it because you can't sell your beer.
Right. But if I was a brewery, could I?
Well,
have
no.
A truck
it
goes to a wedding.
No.
That serves my beer.
You could probably be a caterer. That has a truck, and that's just the draft system.
If that catering venue had a liquor license and you were serving beer under their license at their location, the truck would not be licensed to sell it.
It'd be like licensing a draft system.
Yeah.
Yeah. So those tap trucks that go to event, again, how is that different than a brewery? I'm sorry?
Well, you're maybe talking about some of the private events, like if you came to someone's personal home
for
a private event. Well, if it's in a private home, that would be different than if it's open to the general public, it's invitation only.
Depends on being sold versus being given.
Yeah.
So
okay.
That's the private home thing.
True.
Okay.
And it depends on the truck itself is never licensed. It's a draft system.
Right.
So it's either sitting on a licensed premise, which is how it would have to be done for anything to be sold, or it maybe belongs to a caterer, and that's their draft system that they bring with their catering license for the catered event.
But the space at parks would need to be licensed.
But the truck is not licensed. It's the space, and the truck can sit on the space and act as a draft system.
Okay.
It's an interesting splitting of hairs.
But I'm sure there are states where you can actually license that. We're not one of them.
Yeah, I know I've been to some conferences, and I've seen parking lots that have pop-ups, and a brewery is one of those.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't do it in California.
Yeah, in Colorado, some of the breweries have draft vans that they take to events.
Oh, okay. You just don't see them in California at all. But you see the tap trucks that are selling beer out of the truck.
On a licensed premise.
On the licensed premise.
On the licensed premise.
Yeah.
Not just sitting on the street.
A brewery can't do that.
Not to license the truck.
I mean, a brewery can have a truck sitting on their premises operating as a draft system.
That's okay.
Come to the booth later.
Festivals where there's a big old in California where there's a whole truck tapping beer.
It's just a draft system. It's not licensed.
So
it's just like a bottle. It's just like it's the way of serving the beer. It's not the truck itself.
That event may be licensed just like our yard is going to be licensed for the event pop-up yesterday. The brewers are allowed to pour beer there for this event only. They can't be pouring commercial beer out here today because the license doesn't cover it. The license is not for their tent or their table or their taps. The license is for that location for that moment only.
Right.
Are you guys going to be in your booth
today? Yes.
Yes.
Both. Yes and yes.
Come by later.
Okay.
Yes. It's like a driving jockey box.
Yeah. It is a driving jockey box.
I'm curious if there's like I came in a few minutes late. If there's some very common problems that you see like from newbies coming in. Like what are like the top three mistakes that people like us make when we're coming in? That like it's you see it every time. Like it's going to be this or this. Like what do people make? What is that mistake?
Planning. I mean, I think this is the topic of this is the getting your business plan in order and having everything lined up in order and being prepared for it and having the right budget for it. Than just kind of going at it in a whim and just dealing with things as they come to you. You got to get ahead of it.
And we might think we're planning, but what
So it's
you can break that down just into like micro, just a little bit.
Yeah. No, it's the biggest thing I see is expectations, especially when it comes to money. So that's one of my first qualifiers. It's like, okay, great. It's like, what is your idea? How are you going to approach market? And okay, how much money do you think this is going to take? And then that's going to help qualify. So if you have a preconceived notion of the money, get that qualified. The biggest mistake is to have unrealistic expectations, basically, on the
business. And not knowing the alcohol laws, like what you can and can't do.
Okay, and then I had a secondary question. If in California or the neighboring states, have you guys noticed a trend in certain communities or counties that might be a little bit more friendly or workable? Because some counties, some areas are really, really notorious for being difficult, and some are just... They just have a little bit more flex.
You can't endorse a county,
but could you?
Okay, so biggest piece of advice is if you're county shopping, go to their city or economic development person and then see what their take is. They're not necessarily law, but they'll almost lobby for you. So I'll segue to Dustin.
Yeah,
okay.
So every jurisdiction is going to have an economic development director. That person is trying to bring business into their town. So you want to go to them first, and they can tell you, and they can open up doors for those conversations with those planning departments as to what's allowed and what are they going to be, are there opportunities for, one of the things I spoke about earlier is for discounts on timing and costs for permitting, or maybe they can identify what zones are going to be ideal for what you're trying to do and where should you be looking within that town. And going to that economic development department is going to be your first step. And so if you had come to me, same thing. I would start looking, okay, what are you trying to do? What towns or counties or jurisdictions are amicable to that and are going to be a little bit easier to deal with? And there's a difference, as I mentioned, between planning and zoning and building. Building is statewide, so there's really no leniency there. But planning and zoning is written by those small municipalities, whether it's county or city. And so they have – and they wrote their own code, so they have the ability to massage your –
planning and zoning is always really relevant to that.
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's almost neighborhood relevant, like that type.
Thank you.
And one thing I'll mention that I didn't mention before is along with states, depending on what state you're in, localities may also have their own alcohol laws. California is not that way. We're state. Localities have zoning. They have some things that might affect you, but like – Arizona, you don't just get an Arizona license. You get a Phoenix license. You know, it's all the way down for alcohol specifically. So I should have mentioned that earlier, but check to make sure your municipality, whether or not it has its kind of fingers in the pie.
That's very helpful.
Where I am right now in Ohio, I was surprised to learn that Sunday sales are not okay until there's actually a vote that goes to the community. So there's stuff like that too. Yes, sir.
Hey, all right, so I kind of want to go back to the mead question.
Okay.
I've talked to quite a few guys who ran meaderies in Nevada. That's where I'm from, Nevada.
Nevada.
So the regulations that they talked about were absolutely insane. And I thought that was just Nevada. Then I found out that this was actually some kind of federal thing. So what exactly is the whole federal issue with honey?
Wine.
Meaning, what do you mean, what is the... I guess I don't understand the question.
Okay, so, like, for instance, one of the guys, if they want to make up a new recipe, they have to send it over...
formula. It's about formula approval?
Formula approval, yes.
Okay, I'm going to... Basically, so when you are making an alcoholic beverage that you're basically... that the public is going to consume... If you have any ingredients that are not on the standard list of ingredients that normally go into that, so at one point in time for beer it was water, malt, yeast, hops, and by the way now there's a huge long list of other things that are okay, lime, lemon, stuff like that. But you have to get formula approval. And there are certain beverages, so for example right now kombucha, everyone has to get formula approval. Every seltzer has to get formula approval. It is because the TTB is basically... the FDA for alcohol in a lot of ways. So before you're allowed to put out a product for public consumption, somebody has to make sure that they're not putting ingredients in that are not safe or proven safe. So there may be things that we all think are safe and they probably are safe, but like, you know, one time out of 1,000, do you get a, you know, something's off? So they can only have like
There's lists of ingredients you can put in those products, and if you're putting something in it that's not on that list, you've got to get it approved separately. And so, mead is a little bit different in that I think there's maybe not enough experience with it. And so there's been so many things tried with beer, for example, chicory. I mean, I remember when that came out, and we were putting chicory in a beer. Well, in a home brewers, we would do that just because it was fun. But at a commercial level, that didn't exist, and so you had to get approval to put chicory in your beer. Well, that's gone through, and now it's on the list. But is it on the list for winemaking? Maybe not. So if it's not on the list, you've got to go through that process. And especially on a craft level, you're experimenting with ingredients that may or may not be on those lists. So if you're doing that, you've got to get that recipe approved.
Okay.
Yeah. It's interesting, too. Some states require you to pay to register a recipe. Every recipe, even if you're serving it within the state. Some states, if you're serving it in-state, don't require that. But if it's out-of-state, then you need to look at the state you're serving in. And if, like in Colorado, if you're in Colorado, you have to pay for the COLA approval for stuff that's coming in. But if you're in-state serving in-state, you may not necessarily have to do that. So a lot of different state-specific things.
What does COLA stand
for? What's that?
What does COLA stand for?
Oh, no, Certificate of Label Approval. Yeah. Yes. Okay, we're going to go ahead and wrap up. Emma. I wanted to pop this up here for you. Resources.
Vocabulary. Yeah. I like that.
Thank you all for being here. Again, feel free to visit us in the expo and take a look at those handouts we attached for you.